Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 16, interview with Jessica Klaika, the winner of the 2008 Junior Iditarod.
This is Tim.
And this is Gina, and this is the podcast that makes you wiser, wonder, and work out.
No. Hey, you know what? I was so planning for Jay. I knew it was going to be Jay, so why isn't it Jay?
Here's the deal. I was going to have mercy on you and do Jay because, and let's let our listeners understand,
well,
we are
Junior Iditarod.
Junior Iditarod.
It's and Jessica.
Jessica Klaika.
Yeah, and where do you listen?
All of her family members and most of their dogs have J's with names, so of course Jay would be the letter.
I was going to
get
this
one. But I walked into the studio, and what do I hear? You're going to do Jay, right? Okay, then, we're going to change up the plan.
Okay,
if you hadn't said anything, you would have got Jay, and
so
it would have been
easy.
Give
him to me again. Give him to me again.
Makes you wiser, makes you wonder, and it makes you work out.
Great. Is there just an underlying message there, or is that it?
No, there's a reason I chose those words.
Okay, it's because you're wiser, because that's what the Junior Iditarod does.
Of course.
What's the second one? Working out. Well, yeah, you're running your tail off to try to win, and Jessica's
going to share that. Jessica Klaika had a nice workout the second day of the race, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, I'm so impressed by what she did. And the third one was the...
Wonder. Wonder. Makes you wonder.
Like,
can I do it?
Oh, there you go.
Can I do that?
There you go.
I'm 13 years old. Can I run the Iditarod? But really, that's all nice. Why did I pick W?
I don't know. Because the... I have no idea.
Come on, Tim.
W.
I want to let all you listeners out there know, Tim really is a highly intelligent man.
Doesn't sound like it on these things. W, because the winner for the Iditarod is going to be announced tomorrow.
It might be announced tonight.
Yeah, that's true. As we speak, Lance and Jeff have just pulled into White Mountain, so they've got their eight-hour rest, and then they're going to be sprinting.
Then they're going to duke it out.
Yes.
Lance does have about an hour on him, so
yeah, well,
we're
going
to have to duke it out well.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so back to W.
I have
no idea. Give it to me.
It's the name of a tree.
The willow? Duh.
See, willow came out first.
What do you mean by willow? Why willow, though?
Where did the Junior Iditarod start?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Hello?
I am so far in the back. Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, it's a really neat. Jessica covers a lot of information about the race, which we loved because we haven't really heard too much about it. We've got a couple of folks here in Michigan that have ran the Junior Iditarod, Lindsay Backus and some others, that we've heard about, but we've never really experienced what it's like. And so Jessica does a great job of telling us not only the length of the race, what happens throughout the race, how competitive it is, and what they do even for their spare time when they're up in...
Alaska?
No, in the city that they go to, the village that they go to, up to Yetna Station when they get up there. So it's kind of fun. It's really a neat interview. I was really excited about it. Jessica did a fantastic job. We caught up with her, and talk about a busy person. This time of year, obviously, she ran a couple of different major races, which she'll tell you all about. But we got to talk to her about, I don't know if it's on there or not, but we talked to her that she just got back because she got to go out, first musher out for the ceremonial start of the regular Iditarod. So if you watched from the Iditarod Insider, you probably saw her go out. And also the Alaska Pod Show podcast has got a video of her going out, which is great. And then also, not only does she have school and all the different things that she's doing, but she's still training the dogs, and she's going back up to Nome, I think, Wednesday, tomorrow, to see the finish. So talk about a busy person. So we were so thankful that she was able to help us with the interview. Caught up with her, I think it was on Friday night or Saturday night. I don't know what. It was just, it's been a blur tracking the results. And I don't know, we're going to have to talk about that GPS issue. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you like it as much as I do, but I am glued to the GPS. You don't like it as much.
Well, why don't you explain what the GPS issue is to everybody?
Well, it's
maybe
not
everybody
an issue.
Isn't as glued to the computer as you are.
Oh,
sense
they are.
If they're listening to our podcast that they probably are.
Yes,
but.
They are. I know they are. The GPS is for the Iditarod this year. They tried something new. I think it was 20, 25 mushers. They gave them these little boxes, which are about 2 pounds each, which are GPS units to let us know where they're at. Now, it doesn't give the musher any indication or there's no screen on it so that they know where they're at. It's just a one-way feed up to the satellites. And, of course, then we get to see it. So it has been fantastic. I don't know. I just watching them go, you know, back and forth in the different things that they're doing. And as far as, like, leapfrogging each other, I think it's wonderful. I don't know if next year they'll do everybody or if they won't do anybody at all. We'll have to see what the controversy is or how it shakes out. But I really liked it.
I'm kind of curious if some people declined. They didn't want it on their slide.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. I do know the funny story about Martin Boozer, and I don't know if this is true or not. I read it on one of the blogs that when Martin was taking his 24-hour rest, he actually gave the GPS unit as a joke to one of the pilots to fly around to confuse everyone. So if it's true, Martin, I'd love to hear the story on that one. I think it's great.
We'll get to.
But he never got it back. So that's the funny part.
We have some mail here, so let's go on with our mail. We just want to do a shout-out to Heidi, who does the Iditarod blogs.
Yeah, she did a neat blog on the Iditarod webpage. There's some talk forums or a blog section. And Heidi, for a couple years now, has done, a blog posting or a whole topic on different web links that you can go to. So she's got all kinds of video cams in there, and not her, but she's got the links in there for the video cams, all the different relevant dog sledding sites, and it's just a fantastic job. So thank you, Heidi.
And Ruth Acosta, we're going to say hello to her. We're glad she found our site. She wanted to give Lance a cheer.
Go Lance go is what she said, so thank you for posting
those
comments.
Lance is going. He's still in first at this moment. Also, shout out to Christian Hollingsworth.
Yeah, Christian Hollingsworth, a young man out of California, has put together sleddoggin.com. That's sleddoggin.com. And it's really neat. He's done just amazing stuff on his website, but also what's kind of neat is he offers a free blog area for mushers. So if you've been thinking about putting your photos of your dogs or want to, you know, publicize your kennel in any way or just write some notes and share them with the world, he's got a free section where you can actually create your own free blog. So you don't have to pay anything. It's just, I think it's just there. So take a look at Sled Doggin, and I'm sure it'll cover all that information. So thanks, Christian.
And a special hi to Beth Arnold from Mexico, New York. She's gotten into dog sledding in the roundabout way from a person from church.
Yeah, great posting. She just gave us all kinds of information, so thank you, Beth. That was wonderful. And also Greg Salentin, because Greg gave us a couple of photos that we were able to share. So thank you, Greg. I hope all is working well with your new move. I'm sure you've been keeping busy, and especially with the Iditarod, writing and writing and writing.
If you don't have a subscription to Mushing Magazine, get it. It's a great magazine that Greg publishes.
Oh, great work, Greg, and it's getting better every time.
And last, we just wanted to do a big shout-out to all the Mid-Union sled hauler folks that we race with all season long in Michigan. Just thanks for a great season.
Yes, thank you, everybody. The season was wonderful. We had a ball. I tell you, the ups and downs of this season were incredible.
Every race was totally different. So.
It was bizarre. It was bizarre different how everything plays out different with snow conditions, speed, who shows up, who doesn't.
Dogs,
runners. We had a big experience learning about different runners this year. When it's icy, don't put new runners on. You slide around too much and all kinds of fun stuff.
Our middle musher of the child won the award of the only one of the family that didn't lose her sled.
Yeah. I didn't lose my sled.
Yeah, but you almost thought you lost your skis.
No, I didn't. Only because I got hurt, but I didn't. Yeah,
okay.
Anyway. So we hope you really enjoy this interview with Jessica. So we're going to go right to the interview, and we'll come back right after the interview. Here we go. Thank you, Jessica, for joining us. Jessica, we're so excited to talk to you, not only because you won the Junior Iditarod this year, but just because of all the wonderful things that have been happening to you with going to Anchorage and now getting ready for Nome and so forth. But Jessica, why don't you tell us, how did you get started in running dogs altogether?
Well, my family moved to Bethel, Alaska, which is in western Alaska, when I was a year old, and the dentist who was leaving gave my dad his dog team, and my dad just sort of recreational mush. And then when I was in about sixth grade, I started really training the dogs and running them and wanting to do races, and so we bought a couple dogs from Ed Ethan, and I really got into it. My brothers and sisters, we go out every day and run dogs. So it's pretty much the kids at our house to train all the dogs.
Now, there's seven of you, right? So is it, and you're the oldest, so are you kind of like the leader? Do they all look at you to kind of keep an eye on them, or is everybody pretty independent?
Well, they'd say I'm pretty bossy, I'm sure, because I tell them their jobs they have to do every day. My brother Jeremiah is 14, and so he takes a second to come out and follows me, and Jesse cleans the dog yard, and Joan and Josh fill the water jugs, because we don't have water outside for the dogs, so we have to fill it inside and carry them all out in milk containers.
Okay, I have one very important question. Do all your dogs start with J as well?
Most of them. The dogs that we've had since puppies do.
Okay, I just had to know.
That is so cute. I didn't even put that into you said that. That is neat. So you've been doing it for a lot of years. What got you into the competitive side versus just running for fun?
Out in Bethel, where we live, there's a lot of small, the local villages put on a lot of races, like 50-mile, 20-mile sort of sprint in-between races. And so just everyone's always asking, oh, are you going to do this race? And so then you start thinking, oh, maybe, you know, maybe I could do it. And so I just really got into it, and once you start doing good in races, you're hooked. So much fun.
What was the first race you ran in?
Well, I did like little kid, like one dog races and stuff when I was little, and then my first big race was, I think it was like 80 miles, and it's 40 miles out one day, and you camp out, and then you race home. And so I got like eighth place or something that year, but I had so much fun. And I was the only kid who was in it, and I was in sixth grade, and there was all these adults, and I had a blast. All my friends went on Snow Machine and followed it with my dad and set up the camp, and so I did that. Mostly I race against adults out here because there's not that many kids that do this unless their family has dogs.
Oh, that is amazing.
So it's pretty much the clique of kids out here who do all the dog racing.
Okay. So did you pretty much go into long distance, you know, right away, or did you do any sprint races?
When I was in ninth grade, I did the Accyac Dash out here, which they call a sprint race, 65 miles. And then after that, I started doing the 150 race out here that goes along with the K300.
Your idea of a sprint race would be about 65 miles?
Yeah, that's what they call them out here. I know in Anchorage and everywhere else, like, they're short, but yeah, out here they call them sprint races.
Okay.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, for us, sprint races, like, maybe 5 miles, maybe 6 miles. So I guess more we're like a walk to the mailbox versus a sprint race for you, I guess.
Yeah.
Which is great. So how do you find time with school? And I'm looking at your bio on the, I think it was, the Junior Iditarod page, and it seems like you're doing just about every possible thing you can do as a young person. How do you find time to do everything?
It's crazy. This year, I was training really hard. I did the Kuskokwim 300 out here. I had to scratch because of bad weather, but so I was, every day I go to school and I'm in band, and so I would do my band lessons in the morning before school, and then right after school I get home and go mushing right away. And my younger siblings get off of school an hour early, so they'd have like the sled out and they were ready, everybody's in their gear, and we'd go right away.
Oh, that's awesome. So they were really helping you out and really pushing for you. Now your brother, he originally signed up for the Junior, but he wasn't able to race it?
After the K300, it was sort of a tough race on them. And so I was trying to put back together my team, and they were sort of sad, and we had to do some fun little runs, you know, to get them excited about racing, because the trail was so rough, they just didn't have as much fun as they could have on the K300. I was working really hard with them, and he's involved with wrestling out here, and the junior high wrestling tournament, state tournament, the same weekend as the Junior Iditarod, and it was in Fairbanks, and so he decided to do that this year and do the Junior next year.
Oh, that's wonderful. Plus, he doesn't have to compete with you then, right?
So. Yeah. Yep. And we have to fly all of our dogs in, and so it's a lot of money and time, and so it just helped this year. But I'm pretty sure he's going to do it next year, so that'll be fun.
Oh, yeah, he has to uphold the family name now.
Yeah, pressure's on.
Yeah, I know. People keep teasing him. He's like, Jessica, now they think I have to do good. I'm like, oh, you'll be fine.
Well, I think wrestling is probably the only thing that you're not involved with, right? So, I mean, he's got wrestling to fall back on if he needs. So,
yeah.
That's funny.
Exactly.
Okay, so tell us a little bit, too, about you, Jessica. What do you think it takes to make a good junior musher as yourself?
Well, my first year that I did the Junior Iditarod, I had never raced anywhere but out here in our races. And so it was a really big learning experience. I mean, I just never had gone, flown my dogs anywhere, and I didn't know any of the trails out by Wasilla and Willow there, and wasn't used to how they marked the trail and everything. And I got lost, and it was just... And then the next year you come back and you know all these things. I think it really helps as you get older too, coming back to the trail. And the fact that I train my dogs every day, that it's me out there with my siblings, I think that's another big thing, my dogs, and I'm not using other people's. And so.
Right. And tell me a little bit about your competitive drive. Are you pretty competitive?
My dad says I am. I'm just out there to have fun. But this year in the race, I sort of got a little bit, I was like, oh, I don't want Kane to catch me right at the end. I was like, oh, I got to run. So we ran to the finish line.
So also, it looks like you are pretty disciplined. So would you say that's another characteristic of you?
I would. Sometimes we have really bad weather out here, and I have so much schoolwork, and so I think that's been a big thing, too. That I get out, I have to make sure I follow our schedule every day and get the dogs out and get my homework done. And yeah, I would have to say that's a big part of it.
Have you always been like this, or was it something that as you started to develop your goals of running the Junior Iditarod and just running the races, did you find yourself, I guess, changing because of your goals, or have you always been one of those people that everything was always in its place and you always had a plan and so forth, or did you just change over time?
Probably a little of both. I always did pretty good in school and tried really hard. And then with dogs, I didn't even know that there was a Junior Iditarod until the Stevies came out and raced the K300 and at Eaton, and they were talking, oh, yeah, our kids are going to do the Junior Iditarod this year. Jessica should go do it, because I was doing a smaller race out here, and they met us. And so we got started with that. I think probably the dog racing really helped me keep disciplined.
Oh, I imagine, because you had to deal with the dogs, obviously. And, I mean, they are all about that, too, and the habits and everything else. So, which is fantastic. Now, what do you plan for next year as far as, are you going to go straight into the Iditarod, or are you going to wait till after college?
I am going to wait till after college. I'm going to school next year, and hopefully, I'm trying to really get my siblings going with the dog program here. All year's been teaching them so that they'll be training dogs long gone and able to race the junior. And hopefully, you know, at Christmas break, I can come home and see how they're doing and help them. And I really wish I could but I got to go to college first, get a career, and then come back and run dogs, pay for it.
I was just going to say, you need like about a 5 to maybe a 7 year genetics program really working on, you know, so that by the time you come back, the kid, you know, your brothers and sisters have got all the dogs ready for you, right?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Even if I wanted to run it next year, I don't think we'd have it developed enough. I don't know. Definitely after college, I'm forward to running the Iditarod.
And where are you going to college? Do you know yet?
I'm not sure yet. I applied to 2 Washington schools and also University of Fairbanks here in Alaska, and I don't know yet. I have a whole bunch of scholarships to Alaska, and I'd be around dogs, and so that would be one, you know, well, actually, that's a lot of good reasons to go there. And then, but Washington, I've never lived anywhere else.
Great. Okay, let's focus a little bit now on the Junior Iditarod, the race. Give us a little understanding about the race for those that are listening that don't know anything about the Junior Iditarod, like where it starts, how long it goes, that kind of information.
Okay. Well, the Junior Iditarod is a 150-mile race that goes the week before the big Iditarod. And it's supposed to start every year in Wasilla, but the last 3 years it started in Willow just because of lack of snow. We mush up to a halfway point, Yetna Station, which is 75-mile point. And you have to camp outside, and you're not allowed to go in. There's a cabin up there, but you're not allowed to go inside. You have to cook snow, melt snow for water for your dogs, and just take care of your dogs. And you camp out there for 10 hours, and it's lots of fun. There's a big bonfire, and you get to visit with all your mushing friends. And then you race back after your 10 hours are up the next day, back to the Willow Community Center.
So everybody's kind of on a rolling 10-hour, so as soon as you get in, your 10-hour starts?
Yep. From the time you started the race, they figure out your time that you're allowed to leave.
Okay, so everybody's really probably itching to leave when it's done so that they can get back first, right?
Did you get any sleep that night, or was it were you up all night having fun and that kind of stuff?
No, I've never slept there. We just stay up the whole time. I think some kids sometimes do, but I don't think anyone really did this year. And last year, it was like minus 25. So everybody was so cold, and we were putting coats on the dogs and making sure the dogs were warm, and then we were all at the fire staying warm all night.
So it's a 22-hour race, plus you're up all night. Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
No, it's lots of fun.
Oh, it's I imagine it's got to be. And what a bonding experience with all the other mushers. You probably really get to know them pretty good, huh?
Oh, yeah. You make lots of friends.
Okay, tell us a little bit about the terrain.
Well, you're on the Susitna River for a lot of it. And then you jump up and you go through a little bit of hills on your way to Eagle Song, which is the first checkpoint where you can drop a dog. And then you're sort of on some lakes and some hills, just little hills. But for us, coming from Bethel, we don't have any, I mean, there's not a hill, like, for miles and miles. Our dogs are just used to running on flat tundra and rivers. So my first year, they were like, oh my goodness, what's this? And they just looked up at the hill. But so you just go through some hills, and then you jump down on the Yetna River, and then you go on the Yetna River for a little bit until you get to the halfway point.
Wow. So now you are you using a lot of the same dogs that you used with your first Junior Iditarod so they get used to it, or have you been able to train on the hills anywhere?
They're usually okay. Our training here, I think because I always have like siblings in my sled, and so they do a lot of weight training, so I think that's okay. It helps them. The dogs I used this year were almost all the same as my second year team and my third year. But my first year, I don't have a lot of those dogs running anymore, but a couple of them, my lead dogs did it. And so, yeah, that does help with the dogs. And flying into Anchorage, you know, their experience going in kennels and they're not freaked out.
Oh, I can't even imagine. That must be a whole adventure. And for you guys also to be able to do that, do you guys take small little planes up or do you take a big commercial plane or how do you get there?
This year, Everest Air Cargo sponsored me and flew my dogs in, and then we take an Alaska Airlines jet in.
Oh, fantastic.
And tell us a little bit about the awards that you win.
Well, for winning the race, I got a $5,000 scholarship for college, which I'm going to be putting to use next year. And I got a brand new sled, and Libby Riddles made me a Molokai hat, and I got a Wiggy sleeping bag and snowshoes and just lots of prizes. Lots of different places donate prizes. So many people donate for this race. It's just awesome.
Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, now, that's the question is, who gets to use the sled while you're gone, or do you put it in storage?
My brother, Jeremiah, every day he's been asking me if we can take it. He's like, I want to take it out. It looks like so much fun. And so I haven't let him yet, but I'm sure he'll get the race. I'll let him race it next year.
There you go. It'll be the rite of passage for him to go on the race, right?
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, they helped me so much.
That is fantastic. And thank you to all the sponsors is wonderful also that they actually do that. It makes everybody feel good and everybody that's putting their effort in, it's a great experience. Now for you this year, was it an easy race to begin with? How were the weather conditions? And tell us about, the first leg of it, till you got to the halfway point.
Well, we went to the Mushers meeting, and my dad always goes with me. He flies in, and my mom stays home and watches all the kids back in Bethel. And so we go to the Musher meeting, and I'm all excited, and I'm like, Dad, I hope I get a low number, so I can leave early and get to halfway point quickly. And he's like, oh, Jessica, and he leaves me, and I draw my number, and I get number 20. And I'm like, oh, man, there's 23 teams in the race, and I'm way back starting. And so I was like, oh, man. And we took off, and I was like, I'm going to have to pass a lot of teams. And so we just passed teams the whole way up to the halfway point, and it was pretty hot out. But my dog, that was fine. I'd stop and let them eat some snow, and I snacked them twice on the way up, threw them some fish. And a couple times I stopped and just rubbed snow on them so they didn't get too hot. And we were just passing. I think I passed 15 or 16 teams on the way up, so my leaders got really good at just sort of going around teams. And then we got up there and they did the time differential from when I had started. And I got to leave first out of the checkpoint, which I didn't even know when I got up there I'd done that good. They were like, yeah, Jessica, you're leaving first. And I was like, really? And they're like, yeah. And so I had no clue, but that's what I was sort of hoping for. I started so far back, I was hoping my time was good up there. And then coming down, it was a lot cooler. It was, I think it was -2 when we left. And then it warmed up a little bit, but it was perfect on the way home. Fast trail, and the dogs just loved it. On the way up, it was a little bit hot, but it was all right.
So the first leg, about how many hours of mushing was that?
I think I did it in 6 hours, something minutes.
Okay.
I don't know. So about 6 hours. Both ways, I think, 6 hours.
Fantastic. Now, is your dad, does he get to travel along in Snow Machine, or does he just meet you at the halfway point?
I don't really ever see him during the race, but he Snow Machine's up to the halfway point because he likes to just sort of watch when I get up there. It's so exciting for him because he never gets to see any races in Anchorage either. He loves snow machining. He did the Iron Dog, just recreational, the snow machine race that does the Iditarod Trail. So he likes the snow machine up to the halfway point and watch the race.
Oh, that's
so I'll maybe see him up there, like he'll wave at me, and then I'll see the finish line again.
What, he doesn't walk over and give you a big hug and show all your friends like pictures of you when you're a little girl and stuff? That's
No.
Junior
Iditarod, I wouldn't let him.
Now, is the Junior Iditarod Trail pretty easily marked? Did you have any issues on getting lost or question on which way to go?
Well, my first year, I had a terrible experience just because I guess it's pretty well marked. I was tired on the way back because I hadn't slept that year. And you're supposed to jump off the river after 2 miles leaving the halfway point. And I didn't see that the markers turned. And there were some other markers out on the river from a different race. And so in the dark, I followed their reflective down the river a few miles, and then when it was daylight, I figured out I had gone the wrong way and went back. But this year, no problem, because, I've done this a couple years now, so I sort of know the general where we're going. And then on the way home, I was in the lead, and I hadn't seen snow machines or dog teams or anything for hours, and I got on the Tisitna River, which is huge, so big river, and I hadn't seen markers for a little while, and I was getting really scared, and I was like, oh, I hope I'm not going the wrong way, and all the other kids are past me. Because last year, Rome Boozer got lost for a little bit, I think. Because the Sistina is so big, if you just miss where the markers go, there's trails everywhere, going every direction. So I was getting a little bit worried, and then I saw a marker, and the trail split, and there was markers on both sides, and it's dark, and I'm like, oh, no. So I just parked the dogs and ran to the markers on my right, because that's the way I thought I was supposed to go, and checked, and they were the right markers. So we were okay. But ever since my first year now, I'm just like, marker, make sure we see them. I don't want to ever get lost again. It was so, but it's good now. It has me really aware, and I don't fall asleep on the way home at all.
That's a good thing.
Probably the key point to it is don't fall asleep. Well, I think even Paul Gephardt, you know, obviously you've been watching the Iditarod. You know, Paul Gephardt did that same thing going into, was it Roan? No.
He missed $3,000.
I think it was going
He would have been first into Cripple, and Didi got it because he went the wrong way. So
it can happen to the best of them.
So yeah, and that's what he said. Hey, everybody has a bad day. That's a bad day.
Yeah, I know. That's terrible.
At least it didn't cost you $3,000, which is good.
How many dogs do you use?
The junior Iditarod, you can use a maximum of 10 dogs, so that's how many I use every year.
Okay, and you know, you said earlier on, you said there's the first checkpoint where you can drop a dog. How many dogs do you usually end up with at the end? Or I mean, it differs by everybody, but do you find yourself dropping dogs throughout the trail?
Last year was the first year I had ever dropped a dog in the junior Iditarod, and I had to drop my one male. His foot got a cut on it, so I dropped him there at Eagle Fong on the way home, which is about 30 miles from the finish line. And this year, on the way up, it was really hot out, and one of my furrier dogs was just panting, and I was like, oh, she's just too hot. And so I dropped her at Eagle Fong, just the weather was so hot out. And then on the way home, I didn't drop anybody. And then right before the finish line, I had to pick up one of my dogs and put him in my sled because he was getting tired.
What's that like to have to drop the dog? I mean, your first time that you dropped one of your dogs, how did you feel about that whole thing? Was it emotional at all, or was it just, gotta drop them?
Yeah, you feel, because they're part of your team, you know, and you've trained them all year, and so it's sort of hard to drop a dog, but in the long run, it's good, you know, for the competitiveness. That probably really helped me not to have her in my team then, just because if you just get it down to your dogs who are doing really good. And she was doing fine. She wasn't really pulling any. She was sort of pulling off and on. And so I just dropped her just because she was so hot. But, yeah, it's always hard. That was Jody. And I was like, oh, Jody. But I didn't expect to drop her. But it's been so cold out here in Bethel all year that I think they really got used to the cold. And she was just a furrier dog.
Oh, absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit about the second leg this year. You're coming in. Did you know Kane was as close as he was, or was it based on time that you didn't really know how far back he was?
Well, when I left the halfway point, we had all been talking up there, and so I sort of knew that Kane and Wade and Quinn were pretty close behind me, and I left the halfway point, and I had to stop for a second and put my hook in because one of the dogs jumped over the line and I put him back over. And right when I pulled my hook, Wade, he was right there. I saw his headlight and I was like, oh my goodness, we're going. And I'm like, oh, he's going to catch me any second because he's right behind me. And so we go through all these like windy hills on the way to Eagle Song. And I get to Eagle Song and they have the paper for me to sign. And I sign really fast and go out. And the whole time I'm turning off my headlight and turning around to look behind me so he can't see me, my lights when I turn around. And I'm
no competitiveness there.
Yeah. Well, it turns out he had his light off for most of it so that I couldn't see him. And so it was terrible. I was like, oh, I know he's like right there. And where did he go? And I'm checking and I don't want him to see my light. So I'm being really careful. And so I knew they were behind me. I pretty much ran the whole way back from the halfway point because I really wanted it this year. I was pretty hard. And then when I got on the Susitna River after the hills from Eagle Fong, it's pretty wide and you can see a long ways. And so I could look back and I wasn't seeing any headlights coming and I didn't see anybody. And so I was like, oh, wow, maybe. And I started, you know, thinking maybe I could win this race. And, you know, I knew I needed to just keep going. And then maybe 7 miles from the finish line, my team sort of started to slow down a little bit. And I stopped and I snacked them really fast right there. And then 3 miles from the finish line, my big white wheel dog, Nana, just decided that he was tired and he wasn't going to go anymore. He was just walking, and he's so big that the whole team was blowing way down because he was just walking. So I put him in my sled, and at that point, I turned around, and I had just gotten off the river, but I could see three teams on the river coming, and I was like, oh man, and he's my biggest dog I have, so I put him in, and that dramatically slowed my team down, and so I'm ski-pulling and running and ski-pulling and trying. And so I asked the boys at the finish line if they had seen me, and they were like, I didn't see you till maybe a mile from the finish line, but I saw them coming. And so I'm running around corners and pushing my sled around the next corners so they can't see me. And I cross, I don't know the name of the road, but you cross this road right before you get a little ways before the finish line, maybe 2 miles or a mile. And they go, good job, you're almost there, Jessica. And I'm like, yay, we're almost there. And so I go down. And then like 20 seconds later, I hear, good job, Kane, you're almost there. And I'm like, oh no, he's right behind me. And so I'm running and running, and he still hadn't seen me, he says. And around the next corner, then he came around and said he saw me. And so I'm running, and then he's running. And yeah, it was a pretty exciting finish. I thought he was going to beat me. I was trying so hard.
Oh, that is hilarious. Now, were you just like I say this terribly sounding, were you a sweaty mess when you were done? Were you just exhausted?
That's a pretty good way to describe me. Yeah, I was pretty. My eyelashes were all frozen because I was sweating so much and breathing. And yeah, I was pretty tired. The dogs looked beautiful. They were just standing up. And even the dog in my sled jumped down and he was all happy. But I was just like, oh, I was so tired.
We love the picture. I think Jeff Schultz took that wonderful picture where your eyebrows were just frosted over. I'm like, you know, that's going to be on the college wall when you go to your dorm room, because that's just a great picture. So that is wonderful. Yeah. Now, at the end, when you pull in, you're exhausted. You know, I guess, do you know right away that you've won it because of the time differences, or do you not know until they add up the times and tell you guys?
No, at the halfway point, they had already done the times. And so leaving the checkpoint, that's what place you're really in. And so I knew that I had won when I crossed the finish line. But all the way across the lake, I really thought he was going to pass. And the rules for the race, for most dog races, are when the dog team approaches like 50, I think it's like 50 feet of the next dog team, you're supposed to stop and let them pass. But when you get close to the finish line, they call it no man's land. And that's where the passing doesn't apply there. You don't have to stop and wait for someone. And for us, for our race, that was on Willow Lake, which is a pretty big lake where we finished. And so right when we got onto the lake, that's right where you normally stop and let him pass. And so luckily, I didn't have to stop and let him pass. And so I was just running and running, and I was thinking, oh, he's going to pass me, and he's running. And so that was good.
Oh, and you've got your dog in your basket, too, which is just even, oh, that's got to be exciting.
He was barking and all the dogs were looking back at him, and I was like, shh, be quiet. I was like, why did I put this dog in my sled? He seems fine, but I wasn't going to stop and put him back out, you know. So, but all the dogs, I was like, Nano, you have to be quiet. But it was good.
Oh, that's funny. Now, at the very end, do you guys, obviously, do you tie your dogs up, and do you guys all talk about the race? And is it just like a, I don't want to say a party, but is it just a good time for that last couple hours right after the race?
It is. It's a really fun time. I just talk my dad's ear off, and everybody's, and talk to Kane and everybody from the race, and Quinn had a dog. I guess he was with Kane. The last few miles, a lot of stuff happened. Quinn and Kane, I guess, were together, and then Quinn had a dog in his sled that jumped out and ran, and so he had to stop his team and try and get his dog to come back, and that's where Kane passed him. Yeah, it's lots of fun hearing stories, and Wade telling me, yeah, I turned off my light so you couldn't see me, and I was like, I turned off mine so you couldn't see me. And so it's a lot of fun. And we're all friends, so, you know, it's nice.
That is very nice. It's good to hear the good sportsmanship. It's not like cutthroat in the end. But
I want to know who came up with the idea of turning the light off. Was that something you guys have done before, or would you guys learn that from someplace?
Yeah, that's a Musher trick. Out here, you know, I race against the adults a lot, and a lot of the people around here always did that to me, and I was always like, wow, that's interesting. And so, yeah, I did that, and I'm sure the other people, the kids, have learned from others. People do it a lot in dog races. In the dark, it's good strategy.
Let me just reiterate, too. So Kane actually was in third, and he passed Quinn, so he ended up in second.
Yeah, I think he was in third.
Which was better than where he was.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, he made up a lot of time on the way home, too, I think. He had some good runs. The halfway point, everyone, Wade and everybody were like, yeah, we have pretty good teams. And it was terrible being in first because I knew they were all behind me and coming, and I was like, oh, I don't really want to go, you know, leave the halfway point. I wish this was longer. And they're like, whatever, Jessica, you know, and I'm like, oh, because I just knew they were all right behind me. And I felt sick leaving the checkpoint. I was terrible. My stomach, I really wanted it, but I knew they were right behind me, and they're my friends, and so it was crazy.
I have a feeling that you don't really like the game tag too well, especially if you're not it, huh? You don't like to be chased.
She's like, I'll stay.
Yes, exactly. That's how it was.
Well, you know, we have a lot of junior Iditarod folks that listen to the show also. Is there anything that you would tell them to, you know, I don't want to say how best to prepare, but what do you think they have to think about or know about if they ever want to run the junior Iditarod?
And let's just clarify that a little bit more. So start, like, if you're 13 years old and you're thinking, I want to do this, what would it take?
Well, if you have your own dogs, you know, some of these kids' parents have dogs, and it's really good for you to be running your dogs a lot, taking them out, feeding them and knowing what's going on. I've been feeding our dogs since I was in third grade, so, you know, I've learned everything. And my mom works for the vet out here, so I know a lot about taking care of them and watching for signs if they have splits in their feet. And it's really all about dog care is a big thing. And also just being more experienced each year. You know, your first year, you're going to have problems and you're just going to, you know, you got to learn how to do everything. You know, I cut my finger when I was trying to open a can of heat, and so we have a doctor up at the halfway point and he sewed my finger. And you just have little things that as you just got to keep with it, and eventually, you know, you'll learn.
Did you say he sewed your finger up at the halfway point?
Yeah, I got one stitch in my finger my first year.
That's a good, it's a nice little war wound for it. So okay, so knowing about the dogs and learning about the dogs, Is there a mindset of I don't want to say competition, but do you go out for the fun of it, or are you about, and I don't want to say this the wrong way because I know you're not about just about winning, but are you out there to really do your best in it, or what gets you in the mindset to actually run a 150 mile race?
Well, I think I'm always out there just to have fun, and it's really exciting to see if you've trained your dogs all year and see how they, you know, compared to everyone else's dogs. And this time, I had trained my dog so much this year, and we trained for the K300, and I really knew what my dogs were able to do. And so I think that helped a lot. But I'm always out there to have fun and enjoy the time and see all the kids. But this year, I was sort of hoping to do good. I got third last year, and so I knew I could, and it really helped that I had trained the dog so much.
And so you keep saying training your dogs. So if someone wanted to do this, what would you say? How many hours do they need to train? How many miles do they need to train per week? How does that look?
Well, for the junior, I guess it just depends, you know, what you can do. But this year I was training my brother's team when he couldn't. I sort of have like an A team and a B team that I was training all the time and switching dogs back and forth. And so I was running every day a different team, pretty much like every other day. And anywhere from like 30 to 50 miles is good to train for the junior Iditarod every day. And then probably like a 60-mile long run. You don't have to do a super long run before the junior Iditarod because they get a 10-hour break up there. So if you do the distance of the halfway point, that should be good, I guess. This year we did a lot of really long runs, though, because I was training for the K300s. So we did like 100-mile runs, 2-hour break, run home, you know, things like that. So it just depends, I guess.
Jessica, are you by yourself when you do these runs, or is there a snow machine with you? Or
a lot of the time, I try and bring a brother, my younger brothers. They're my weight in my sled, and so I a lot of times bring them with me. And for the long ones, like the 100-mile one that we did, my dad would go up on snow machine sometimes. He went up for that one, and every once in a while, my brothers will take the snow machine out and help me. We'll make the trail, so we have it good. But usually, I just go out with a brother in my sled, or I go by myself, depending on what they're doing. It's nice to have them in my sled, though, to help slow us down on the way out. Because we live sort of in town, Bethel, so we have to cross some roads and pipes that are above the ground here because of the permafrost. So you have to, they have these little like bridges over the pipes that you have to jump. And so we really try and slow. Sometimes I hook up to a snow machine leaving the yard so that I can be slower until I get out on the tundra.
Wow.
Have you ever gotten in trouble being on your own for such a long training run?
No, not really. It's pretty safe around here. There's lots of snow machines. I always use my, there's two trails, you know, and I always tell my family which trail I'm going out on, which direction, or if I'm going on the river. And so they know, and I tell them general time that I should be back and how far I'm going. And so if I didn't show up, my mom sent people out before. She sent my sister out to make sure we were okay. And we're like, yeah, we're fine. I just went a little bit farther today. So that's always good. You have to always make sure someone knows where you are.
So no satellite, no GPS tracking for mom to sit there at the computer and watch you? Oh.
No.
And so how, as you were preparing to do these longer races, especially the K300, which is incredible, it's too bad you didn't get to go through with that, but how do you gradually add dogs to your team, and how do you learn how to handle them? How did you do that?
Yeah, that's a big thing, too, is having bigger dog teams. Well, last summer, my main lead dog, who had led me to my third place in the junior Iditarod last year, we bred her to have puppies, and she died this summer, and it was terrible. It was the worst thing that had happened. And so this year, we were really focusing. We needed to have a really strong leader up front. And so when you're training big dog teams, like if we were for the K300, it's really hard to just have a lot of leader training. And so I was trying to take out small teams for as long as I could before I took out larger teams. And Most of our dogs have gone from people around here, and we've bred and had a couple litters. Went from having like 10 dog teams to 12 dog teams for a while, and then when I take 14, I usually had a brother in my sled or a really big drag, or I put dog food in my sled to slow us down. Big bags of dog food, so I'd have weight, because 14 dogs are really strong.
That's great. And then as far as the distance going, how long did it take you before you really got comfortable going on the longer runs?
I really enjoyed longer runs. It's a lot of fun. Dogs settle into their good pace. I wasn't really worried about going on longer runs. Just the amount of dogs was sort of the scary thing for me, adding dogs. That was okay. The length of the runs are good. I just do like loops. We have to go out on the river and come back. And we sort of make a big, huge circle around the whole town of Bethel before we leave. So really, we're not too far away from town, even on our long runs. And there's villages up and down the river. A lot of the time I was running up the river towards Accucheck. So you see people, and so I wasn't really worried about the long runs that much. I've grown up going back and forth around here, so.
But in the beginning, before you, like, did your first junior Iditarod, I mean, did you start with 5-mile runs, 10-mile runs? Or have you just always been doing long runs?
Oh, no. When I was first going, I'd take 3 dogs and go like a mile and turn around and come back. And then I had a friend who lived way out at the edge of town. She liked to go with me, so I'd hook up 3 dogs and go to her house and pick her up. And then we'd come back to my house and she'd visit. And then sometimes she'd be in my house and I'd take her home with the dogs, or just little fun things like that in town, you know, in between sort of the houses. There's like big tundra spots that divide the subdivisions. And so I just do like little runs out on lakes around here. So yeah, I guess my first junior Iditarod, I really did start going on long runs. And back then my dad was with me a lot on snow machines, following me. And then gradually I just got comfortable. Once you know the trails, it got good. But yeah, he showed me all my trails and I learned how to do it. And I started out with really small teams.
You know, as a little sidebar, you know, I'm a daddy, and we have 3 daughters that are running in sprints and that type of thing. It sounds like it's so important to have a mom and dad that really, or, you know, a family that really supports you. Is there anything that I guess you want to tell your mom and dad, you know, that we can put on the air?
Well, without my mother, I would never be able to do this, because she keeps everything running at home and helps with all of the dogs, because she works for the vet when they get sick, and she goes out and booties them when I come home from school before I could drive to school. Now I drive to school and can come home, but she picked me up right, so I didn't have to take the bus home because that took longer. She picked me up right when I got done so I could come home and take the dogs out. And my dad, you know, he fixes the snow machines when we need the snow machines to make the trails. He fixes them when they break, and he goes out with me all the time, and he helps me get to Anchorage, and he's just big support, helps me figure out how many miles I should go, you know, and my parents are a huge part of it.
That is wonderful. And we hear somebody in the background. Is that a little sister or little brother?
That is. That's my sister, Jordan. She just woke up from her nap.
Oh, that is wonderful. Well, is there any inspirational side of this at all that you'd like to share with us and kind of share with anybody that is either in your situation or, gosh, even older, that would say, I would love to start running and getting into any kind of races and or just running dogs? Anything you'd like to give them advice with?
Well, for people looking to get into dogs, you know, it's a huge responsibility and lots of time. That's what we've been talking about a lot here. Are my brothers going to be able to keep going, you know, and keep the kennel going as it is? And so I think we're going to downsize a little bit this year just so that they can have a smaller amount of dogs to be training. And so people starting, you know, you want to really maybe go with someone who has a dog team and see what it's like before you get your own dogs. And there's just so much work, you know, the feeding and taking care of a big dog team and running them. And the sled dogs can't, you know, you can't just leave them at home. You know, they got to be being run. That's what they're meant to do. And when you leave them home, you know, they break loose and you got to be running them. Yeah, I would just, you know, go with someone and learn about it first before you really just dive in and get dogs. But it's a great thing to be out there with your dogs on the trail. It's the best thing in the world.
That is awesome. Now, you know what? We didn't really ask you that. First of all, I guess how many dogs do you guys have now?
We have 25 dogs right now.
That's
5 of them are under a year.
Oh, that's wonderful. And then did you learn from somebody? Did you mentor under anybody to learn?
Well, my dad taught me, you know, just recreational. And then there's mushers here in town. Myron Inksman, his son ran the Iditarod last year, and he started the K300 out here. He's a big mentor out here. And, you know, I call him and say, should I go this far, do you think? Things like that. And Tomas Israelson was another musher out here who used to run the Iditarod. And sometimes if I was having leader problems, he'd go with me and he'd say, okay, now you have to say this and, you know, have her, you know, you don't want to go on the same trail every time. And Ed Eaton and Ruthie, his wife, they're a big help. Sometimes I call and Ruthie gives me advice, though. So.
That is wonderful.
There's a lot of people, you know, that you talk to and have given me advice. My dad was the first person who took me out on a dog sled. And so I can just remember being a little kid sitting in a sled. And when he goes, oh, do you want to try go on the back? You know, and that's like just the greatest thing. You're like, oh, wow, I can go on the back and drive the dog. And so that's what I've been doing with my little sister who's 8. I'm like, Joan, do you want to go on the back? You know, just get her really excited about mushing and help keep our family going.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, you know, one of the good questions is, do you know what you want to go to college for yet?
I was wanting to be a doctor. I went to a lot of biology camps this summer, and that's what my dad is. And so I was thinking about that for a while. But now, during dog racing and stuff, I really am thinking about the dog side of medicine and maybe becoming a veterinarian and doing that, because when you're running dogs, you know, and if someone has a sore wrist, you really, you know, I really want to know, oh, what's wrong with this dog? And so I think that would be a really cool thing to be able to know everything about your dog while you're running it.
That's wonderful.
Okay, well, we also haven't heard about your chance to run the Iditarod, at least the beginning in Anchorage. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What was that like?
That was the coolest thing ever. It was awesome. I had never done anything like that. There's so many people, and it's just so wonderful. My dad rode my second sled behind me, and I had an Iditarider, and he was just awesome, and it's just so much fun being there. People are coming up, and they're like, can you sign this? And I had never done that before, and I was like, wow, you know, sure. It was so much fun, and you get to see everyone getting ready for the race. And
what about the dogs? Whose dogs are you using? You don't fly your dogs up.
No, we didn't fly ours back in. We used Karin Hendrickson. She's been doing sort of mid-distance dog races, and I think she's going to run the Iditarod probably in the next couple years here.
Oh, that was great.
And so she's really nice, and she let us use her dogs in the start.
Great. Was there anybody that you saw that you never saw before that you were real thrilled seeing, or are all these mushers like no big deal to you because you've lived around them your whole life?
No, it's really fun to see everyone. I've gotten to see them last year, and Andy Angstman, when he ran the Iditarod, so I've gotten to sort of see them and stuff, but it's still so cool to see, like, and we get to see a lot of them when they come out here for the K300. But we get to, like, you know, you see their big, huge dog trucks and all of their handlers, like Jeff King and Martin, you know, and everyone. And it's just so cool because out here, you know, nobody really has, like, big, huge dog truck and handlers, and it's just really fun to see everybody.
Oh, that's awesome. And so now, just to let everybody know, we're recording this on Saturday night, the 8th. It's about 11 o'clock our time. I guess it's back about 5 o'clock your time. Now, the Iditarod is in the thick of it. You know, we've got Lance and Jeff King fighting it off and fighting it out in the battle in the front and so forth. You're going to be there in Nome when they get over the finish line, or is there a certain time or day that you're going up there?
I'll probably miss the first couple mushers because I don't get there till Wednesday, and I'm thinking that they're probably going to finish on Tuesday, maybe even like Monday night. Lance and Jeff might come in, and so I'm sort of bummed, but I have to go to school, you know, a little bit. And so I'll get to see the middle mushers coming in. And so I'll get there already. So I'll be watching, you know, I'll be watching the TV right after school and in the morning to see who's finishing. But so I'll probably miss the first couple.
So you're not hoping for a big snowstorm to slow them down, huh?
Well, that'd be cool, but no, not for them.
Got it. Good point.
That would be good for them.
And it might not even slow them down either. So there we go. That is funny.
But they all look beautiful. I mean, it's so fun. And my dad got the Iditarod Insider, and so we've been watching that, and lots of fun.
You know, that is such an awesome blessing. We've been watching that and the GPS tracking. You know, I first...
The GPS thing is pretty cool. Yeah.
When they first came out stuff, I was like, I don't know. But now I'm like, oh, I'm just glued to that thing.
He's glued to the GPS thing.
I know.
Get back on the stats. Watching that little dot.
Ooh. I know. It's terrible because everybody doesn't have one. So, you know, you'll be like, oh, Lance is in the lead. And then my dad will be like, or this is back in the beginning, and my dad goes, well, you know, Paul's out there too somewhere, and he was out there, and you're like, oh, man. But, yeah, it's really fun, and they update every, you know, you got to sort of watch when it was last updated because it takes a little while, but it's really cool to see in between checkpoints where they're at.
I guess I'm sitting here, and I'm probably doing the same thing that you were doing, and I just can't wait for next year. Hopefully everybody will have one because then it'll be totally interactive, and you'll see it. But I don't know. I don't know if that'll happen. So, and especially like
I know, I understand why like people wouldn't want to carry them, but like it's neat for the people watching, you know, to see if everyone had one.
Yeah, it's definitely not for them. It's for us. You know, it's all about us, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, so in five or six years, when you come back as a vet and you're jumping back into the Iditarod, I can't even imagine what it's going to be like in that point, right? So that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's just going to be wow. So.
Well, you have a lot of sponsors. Is there anybody that you'd like to say thank you to over the air at all?
Well, Dr. Bob Stepp does all of our dog care out here in Landon. Air Cargo and Everest Air Cargo sponsored me this year and flew me and my dogs in and back home. And there's just so many people back in Bethel who help us, the Kaiser family, Inksmans, Lucas's, Beidels, just there's so many people. So just thank you to everybody who helps with the race and all the sponsors of the Junior and the Big Iditarod.
And is there any other passions you want to share with us? Anything else that you want to tell us about? Or
I don't know. Pretty much just dog school. Family, sports, we're pretty crazy here. Everyone's always doing something, running around. My sister's out hunting with my dad right now, and Jeremiah just got back from his wrestling thing, and Jesse's practicing the flute in his room, and, you know, everybody's just everywhere doing things.
Oh, that's exciting. You know, I'm a little jealous. What can you hunt this time of year?
Caribou.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, now you just ruined Tim's night.
Yeah, Jessica, we're here in Michigan. We don't get, you know, no caribou and no moose, yeah, so we just settle for white-tailed deer. So.
She was really excited. I woke up this morning and she was, we're going hunting. And I was like, oh, I want to stay home and run the puppies, but I really want to go. And so it was a big, who was going to go with dad today? So Jenny went with him. The boys were sleeping over at a friend's house. So they didn't get to go.
Oh, that's right. Wonderful. Well, Jessica, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
We wish you well.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Future endeavors. We know it sounds like your life is really going well. It's well-rounded and you're off to great things.
Thank you, guys. You're so nice.
Great night, and thank you so much. Oh, wasn't that neat, Gina? I just loved not only the climax of her race of saying, you know, or hearing as she's going over that one road, you know, way to go, Jessica. You've only got a little ways to go. And then about 10, 15 seconds later, hearing the same thing about Kane.
Way to go, Kane! Ah, he's right behind me!
Talk about pressure. I think that is wonderful.
And I've been in that experience, you know, several times. You know, the second day when you're racing and you don't have many seconds in between you and the one that came in second, you're constantly looking. And one time I did have a race where it was just quiet. I went out first. It was quiet, quiet, quiet. I just thought, all right, I just got this made. I've just got to get home and I'm going and I'm going. And all of a sudden I hear trail. And I looked and I thought, where did she come from?
Like, she's right behind you?
She was right behind me. And it's like, she's scared. I'm like, oh. So I went, oh, man. And so I, you know, just slowed down a little bit and thankfully, but not for her thank, you know, as she passed, she had a young pup in her back that ended up tangling a little way up. And I ended up passing her again, and I ended up taking first that race. But the fact that someone's behind you, man, that is something to get over. So
you don't like getting chased. You don't like getting...
No. I like being first, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's just something you got to get over. But anyway, Jessica, that was just great. Yes. What I liked best about her interview and understanding about who she is and about her family is the sense of family that she brought out. You know, you don't hear, like, we didn't hear anything about sibling rivalry or fighting.
Teamwork.
You know, it was a family that really works together. And that's what mushing is all about. Recreational mushing is all about anyway. And it takes a family. It takes more than one person to do this sport.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to do a shout out to all her brothers and sisters. So way to go, you guys. You were impressive, you know, and I think you could hear in Jessica's voice how much she loves you guys and how much she's going to miss you guys as she goes off to college. But how proud she was in talking about how it was a team and it was a family team where everybody pitched in. And that is just, I mean, even down to putting somebody in the basket to go with her, I thought that was just so impressive and what a loving family that mom and dad have put together.
Way to go, Clayka family. Thanks again.
And please feel free to come out and give us some comments at thesleddogpodcast.com. My email is tim@sleddogpodcast, and Gina's is
Gina@sleddogpodcast.
And that's GENA@sleddogpodcast.com.
Very important.
Oh, and also, don't forget, we've gotten quite a few people that have really enjoyed on the left side of our webpage, there's a little box, and it says that if you'd like us to send you a reminder for each one of our episodes, because we're not always, you know, I guess every week at the same day, or it's like every other week and so forth. We're kind of sporadic, so there's a little reminder that will automatically be sent to your email address that we have a new Sled Dog Podcast episode coming out. So if you'd like that, go ahead and feel free to go out on the webpage and put your email in there, and it'll automatically put you in the little reminder. So thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Have a great day, and
be blessed.